All right, how's everybody doing? You know, I don't get tired of that theme song. Thanks to Craig Pilo for putting that together for me. Jeez, so many months and months ago, but it's still happening, man. I love it. So anyways, thanks, Craig Pilo. I know you watch the show. I know you can't call in, but I know you watch the show there in LA. So hopefully everybody is having a wonderful Tuesday. Beautiful day today, and it looks like phase four, we are starting to open back up this weekend or early next week. I can't remember what Chicago is. I think it's this Friday, actually. Phase four opens up, which is clubs and venues, because I went through an entire long meeting today to make sure that we were up to standards over at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, although we're not opening until September. So stand by for that. Of course, all the information at epiphanyshy.com. But it's 50 people or less, or 25% of your indoor crowd you can actually have. But there's a lot of stipulations in order to make everybody safe. And that is the only reason why we're opening up. So I will remind everyone again, as I always remind everyone when you watch this show, hand sanitizer, face masks, 6 feet apart, and we can have a fantastic summer. But look at what's happening in Florida, Arizona, and a few other states, and it is spreading out of control. So again, I'm glad we were shut down the way we were shut down. It was very unfortunate. It was not ideal. I'm not a fan of not seeing live music or being able to be at any festivals, but so far the city's doing well. So just a public service reminder from Chicago Music Revealed here in Chicago Jazz Magazine. Of course, I'm Mike Jeffers. I get 30 seconds into the show without even talking about it. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and Chicago Music Revealed is the show you are watching. Today, we've got a very special guest, and I'm going to bring him up right now. Chris Anderson, the curator, the founder, the brains behind the Jazz Record Art Collective, which happens at the Fulton Street Collective during normal times. Several times a week, sometimes there's a whole list of shows each week, and during normal times it's a great place to go. You see live music, you can see performers, and I'm going to let Chris talk specifically about it, but I mean, musicians take on some legendary albums and recreate them with an audience there, and then they always have a visual artist who's painting along or creating some visual art to coincide with the music. So the creativity is incredible. The thought process on putting this together is really outstanding. There's nothing like it in Chicago. I don't even know if there's anything like it throughout the country. And Chris is now pushing forward. He's going to start doing some virtual things and dealing with the COVID-19 stuff. But you are back in business and things are moving along. And congratulations. And you got a show tomorrow night. And I think I talked plenty, so I'm going to let you talk now, Chris. Did I cover everything?
I think you got it all. That's it. Thank you for being here tonight. Yeah.
Well, let's talk specifically about the shows coming up, and then we'll backtrack and talk about how you came up with the concept and how you launched it. But you've got a show tomorrow night. Carl Kennedy's playing a special show tomorrow, live virtually, that people can check out at Fulton Street Collective, facebook.com/Fulton Street Collective. So why don't you talk a little bit about the show tomorrow night and some of the virtual stuff you have coming up?
Well, when the whole broke, you know, obviously everybody shut everything down. As things started to progress, well, we could do, you know, virtual shows, somebody in somebody's, you know, from somebody's apartment, somebody's house, everybody, you know, divided up into their own sheltering abodes. So I think it started with Dustin Ramsey doing a, and Dustin and Katie, they did a Following a Song record, and they did it from their apartment. I hosted from my apartment, and then it just kind of went from there. And then I think about a month ago, we started to do about 3 weeks ago, started to do shows from the Gallery, which is set up for that now. We're using OSB, online broadcast software,
yep,
which feeds into Facebook, and this is kind of the way of the future. We've done several shows. We've EQ'd the room, and it's just usually a sound tech, me, and a couple performers, and that's it. So tomorrow we have Carl Kennedy doing Mary Williams' 1945 Zodiac Suite, and he'll be accompanied by visual artist Abina Motaboli, and at the 7 o'clock tomorrow. There'll be a camera on. The way we set it up is we have a camera on the musician, and then in the lower corner of the same screen, there's a camera on the artist doing their work. So you'll see the progression of their work as the show goes on.
So it's interesting to me because you're able to do this and you're able to push forward throughout this virtual stuff. I mean, what's the reaction you've been getting when you've been launching these things as a virtual concert? Because, you know, in person, people are able to experience the music and they're experiencing the visual artist off to the left and stuff. What's the reaction you've been getting from some of the feedback from some of the viewers?
Well, I think the good thing is that everybody's expectations were pretty low. So that kind of opened up the door to, and not because of the quality of the performance, but because of this is a totally new to everybody, and where he's just kind of navigating this foreign land show by show, step by step. And you know, you'll be setting it up, and I'll have the event page on my phone, and I'll be getting texts. You know, I can't hear this. Speak up, blah blah blah. And it's kind of tough to manage. I feel more comfortable speaking in front of 150 people than I do in my apartment talking to a camera, like, oh God, what am I doing wrong? It's terrible, man. And then you just get more used to it. And I think now that we're operating in the gallery without an audience, we have the equipment that really punches out the sound and into a nice mix. I'm hoping that people are more inclined to listen and to have higher expectations, because that's what we're shooting for.
You know, what are you hearing? Because the way I feel like, you know, with the way, you know, obviously with COVID-19 shutting everything down immediately, and this is talking specifically to your situation too, is everything got shut down immediately, and now everybody's trying to navigate and figure out this streaming platform and trying to figure out how to push their music out and how to connect with audiences and how to reach a wider audience. Outside of the technical you know, back and forths, which I still run into. I mean, this is episode, 57 or something like that, of doing this show, you know, and I'm running it through a similar kind of software that you use. And there's always little glitches and things like that. But I'm reaching a lot of people that I would have never reached just with doing a weekly show like I was with Chicago Jazz Magazine, just because of the frequency and because of the different platforms I'm able to push it out on and all that stuff. But from your standpoint, are you finding that you're reaching a larger audience, like people that have never been down to an actual show in person, is now they're able to consume it at home? And, you know, I'm sure that there's some people that have never experienced it live, but are now consuming it at home just because of the convenience of it.
I think that's exactly right. We're getting inquiries from during the performance, but also before the performance, because right now we're just running on Facebook and Instagram. People calling up or emailing, you know, how do I watch this? I really want to catch this and blah, 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 blah. And I got to Mark from Europe and Asia. It's got tons and tons of people, but the individuals that are coming from all these different places says to me, that's why.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling. I'm also feeling like a lot of musicians are also being able to connect with different people that they would have never been able to connect with before. So if there's a silver lining, you know, in a pandemic, that might be it, you know. So,
I think that there's two silver linings. One, being able to connect with people all over the world. Two, only needing a week to promote a show.
That's right. And
that's pretty much it.
That's it.
How are we going to get there? Well, just turn on your phone and you're there, man.
That's it. Well, let's talk about this concept. Let's go back. Now, how did you end up thinking of this? Because I know, from running businesses and being in the jazz business and trying to put something together and trying to organize one performance, maybe a month, you know, during normal times. I mean, for you to actually start organizing performances, taking on these famous recordings, number one, and talking musicians into doing it, but also now, you know, during normal times, you're cranking these things out 2-3 times a week sometimes. I mean, it turns into a full-time job unless I'm completely off my rocker here. I mean, there's a lot of organization and a lot of connecting that you have to do. So how did you first come up with the concept and why?
It was back in summer of 2013, the creator of the Fulton Street Collective, Joe Lanasa, he created it with Anna Firm, who's a musician in Chicago. Anna Firm is Trigger Gospel. They started back in, I believe, 2003. And they brought me on board to kind of manage things. And then I had an idea to do live performance, obviously. And but I wanted it to tie in with the aesthetic of a collective. And so let's bring in a visual artist. And now, I had no idea this was going to work. And I contacted Neil Alger, who I had played with in a couple different projects. And, you know, what do you think? You know, what would you want to do? And he came on board with flutist, George Flutist, Scott Burns, and Matt Ferguson. And I think they did Speak No Evil? Can't remember.
Yeah.
It all kind of blends together after a while. the first show, there was four people on stage, one visual artist, and five people in the audience. So they're like, man, there's only one way to go from here. That's all. And there was a torrential rain. So everything that could go wrong went wrong. But I didn't want to give up. You know, I felt like I had something unique. And it was in an environment where, you know, you don't have to tell people to shut up. Everybody who's there is there for the experience, to experience the music and to experience the visual art.
Yep.
And the way it grew, it really was Dave Rempus performing Jackie McLean's Action album 6 months down the road, where he really took the mic and pressed forward with talking about Jackie McLean and talking about the record and how it was made and what was going on in the music scene and New York scene. And I, sitting off stage, went, will you play a song, dude? Play anything. And then I kind of moved to the side of the stage and looked at the audience, and they were right there with
me. Yeah.
And that said to me, okay, this is working. This is turning not only into a live performance and visual art, but the audience getting an education in this record and in this musician and about this musician. And so that's the way I kind of frame it now. It's a 75-minute class in that record.
That's what I think is really interesting. And it's surprising to me that venues didn't catch on to that, because I feel like having a musician come in, especially like a lot of the musicians you have there, I mean, they're really well-known musicians, but they're not seen playing long form, like of the artists that have influenced them, right? They're not playing an entire album the way the guys do and the ladies do at the Jazz Record Art Collective, but then also hearing the stories and talking about the music. So it's a history lesson for the musicians that are first performing it, because they have to do a lot of research and figure it out and understand what they're playing and why they're playing it and why these tunes were written and why it was put together on an album the certain way and all that. And then they have to convey it to the audience, which I find your storytelling, you're really, you know, giving people stuff that they're never going to hear anywhere else, which I find fascinating. And I mean, is there any other venue or any other clinics or anything like that actually do something like this? I haven't heard of it.
I mean, maybe the Jazz Gallery in New York.
Yeah.
They have more of a what's called an installation, or a different art installation for a lot of different performances. I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel having a visual artist accompany a musician.
Right.
But it just seemed that the more we did it, you know, and we took our lumps for sure, you know, but you got to learn from that. And, you know, a couple of artists that do it just such grace and such professionalism and are so engaging would be obviously the Lewis Achenbach, who's a member here at Fulton Street Collective.
Yep.
Arthur Wright. And then you have a lot of younger guys that are really, really caught on and are really hot, like John Ross Wilson and tomorrow night, Abina Motoboli. You know, they just get it. And I've had some visual artists come in and not get it. And like, oh, you just painted a pile of mud. But but it's, again, it's trial and error, especially yeah. in those early years, for sure.
Well, now how does the whole thing work? So, I mean, obviously there's a suggested donation to come in, but for the artists, they're able to then, they paint and then they're able to sell that work there, right? I mean, that's what they're able to do. Is that sort of the
during
catch for them?
Yeah, during the normal business hours, if you will, we would allow the visual artist do an installation, a small installation, and then paint as the or sketch during the performance. And then we have what's called the blast door, which is an old a fire door in the gallery, and it's magnetic. So then they post everything on there. And I tell artists, you know, go for volume, go for quantity. If you're going to do just one piece and try to sell it for $500, ain't going to happen. If
right.
you do a lot of smaller pieces and make them more accessible, you're probably going to do well. And so we've worked out a system where they work on the show, host on the wall, we open everything back up again after the show. And a lot of time it's musicians or family members of musicians that buy the work themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating. It's such a great concept, man. I mean, congratulations on doing that. So how many years has this been now?
We started in September of 2013.
So talk a little bit about your background, because you also, I mean, you were curating and programming some music at some different clubs outside of this place originally, right? Or you were helping out. I mean, how did you first get into like the live music programming thing? Because that's not something that people can stumble into and actually do well.
I moved here in 94 after school and was in deep into the rock scene, was playing in a lot of different groups. And for some reason, I just migrated to being the business operation or the operations manager for each project that I was in, because just being fiscally responsible and knowing how to promote and knowing what to do with the money. So I was in a lot of different bands in the 90s, and then I started managing and booking a club in Evanston called Nevin's Live, which was associated with
Nevin's Club. Yep, sure.
And that went, that was a tough nut to crack, but we made our mark, and then got new owners, and ESPN Nation took over, and that was that. And then I got hired to manage the Green Mill, and I was there for 12 years. And while I was doing that, I still had my own side booking company where I booked jazz at different restaurants and my own gigs and so on and so forth. So it was kind of a natural progression to go from Green Mill to here, where, you know, I'm calling all the shots.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, starting off and playing in a band, there's always one guy that has to kind of take the reins and actually start doing something, because everybody can talk about doing stuff. But then there's the one guy in the band that actually starts doing, booking the band, booking the gigs, getting the promo, working the deals. And that was you. As like, in my case, that was me, because everybody else has a lot of great ideas, but nobody actually wants to do anything with them. So, you know, in order to push it forward. But for you to parlay that and then bring it into the club scene and actually work at Nevin's, which, you know, I'm real familiar with Nevin's, obviously, and then go over to the Green Mill. I mean, that had to be like a university of how to book people and how to work with musicians at the mill, because, I mean, it's 7 nights a week, essentially, and, you know, what, 3-4 groups a night sometimes. I mean, that, and then being able to work with Dave and all that. I mean, that's quite a university of Chicago music right there. So you had quite a base to choose from, and you probably became friends with all these guys, right?
That's exactly right. And I was able, you know, and I, you know, you have the relationships, and then you have that pool where you have an idea or you have a date or you have something that sparks, like, who could I get to do this? Oh yeah, get this guy over here. You know, Dave does all the booking at Mill, and that was kind of like, you know, being there for 12 years was kind of like captaining a drunken jazz pirate ship for 12 years. And it was great. It was a fun ride. It was across the gamut of emotions. And but in the end, it's kind of a young person's gig. You know, when you're single and you're 30, managing Mill is great. You know, it's awesome. Married kids in their 40s, getting home at 5, 6, drinking of cigarettes and booze. not so much. So it was time to move on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, but I think it's interesting because, I mean, you know, we both know a lot of the same musicians. And I mean, if you come up to somebody and you approach them with your concept, especially when you were trying to prove it, right? I mean, at the Jazz Record Art Collective, it's a lot easier to talk to musicians who you have a relationship with, who they trust, and you're dealing with them and you're telling them, this is kind of the idea I'm thinking of. I don't know if anybody's going to show up, but here's what I'm thinking. As opposed to like randomly calling up some cold call people and trying to get something off the ground. I find that having those relationships, even with what I do, is just, it's, you know, everybody's on the same page then. So it had to be a huge help in your world to be able to get some of these top dudes and ladies. I keep saying dudes. I was talking to too many people today.
What's up, dude?
I was talking to a lot of rock bands today, so I apologize. But, you know, talking to all these musicians, you're able to pitch them a little bit differently and bring them on and give them the concept. And I feel like talking to a lot of musicians that have performed for a Jazz Record Art Collective performance, because I have them on the show sometimes to preview things when they're going to do things over there, they are so into what they are doing. And I know some of this music is extremely difficult to play and recreate. So they're practicing, they are getting together to rehearse. I mean, are you kind of shocked at how into some of these things that these guys are? I mean, the amount of time they have to put in to actually recreate some of this stuff is incredible.
I think it's that's a sign that it's working. It is very impressive, the dedication and how serious they take it. And, you know, they are picking a musician or a record that that speaks to them and has been a very an influential album in their life. And they, you know, want to perform it right. And so the amount of hours they put into it, that and but that puts added pressure on me to get the word out and to be walking around Michigan Avenue with a bell saying, get over to Fulton Street Collective tonight because this is going to be really cool. So it's, I think it's pressure on both sides.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's really an incredible project, I guess we'll call it. But I mean, you know, now moving on, into the seventh year, I think, if I'm doing my math correctly, almost to the eighth year. So, I mean, right. And it just keeps growing. So talk a little bit now. You've got the Jazz Record Art Collective, and then you have the Fulton Street Collective where you have one that is the Jazz Record Art Collective where they do the famous recordings and they talk about it and all that. But then you also have kind of branched out in recent years and you're presenting performances outside of the Jazz Record Art Collective name because they're coming in to perform at the Fulton Street Collective. So talk a little bit about that because I know there's been some release shows, there's been some other performances right. over there. What's the differentiation between the two?
Well, I think it was probably our third year in where I started to realize that we could have just regular shows here. But have the environment and the aesthetic and the atmosphere be the same as a JRAC show. Jazzard Arc, like acronym is JRAC.
Yeah.
And to have it where you do have a live visual artist and the musicians have the freedom to talk to the audience, engage with the audience, because you're in the corner of a gallery and the audience is right there. They're on couches and they're right in front of you. So having that enhanced engagement with the performer and audience members works. And having that added element of the visual art makes it even more unique.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, being able to combine. So what are you up to, like, during normal times? And then let's talk about the upcoming shows here. But during normal times, what is it, about 2-3 times a week now, right? I mean, when you're able to do that, one a week of Jazz Record Art Collective usually, and then a couple of just Fulton Street Collectives?
We do anywhere from, I would say, two to four JRAC shows a month. And then on top of that, another 4 to 6 regular shows during the month. So, and that we usually try to keep those on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Weekends obviously are more geared towards private events, art openings, and the versatility of the space opens up the door. We can maneuver stuff around. You know, we have a grand piano, we have an M3 organ with full sound system, so we can modify the room to cater to most events. And so you wear a lot of hats in this gig. You're a booking agent, you're a talent buyer, but you're also an event manager, coach, and psychologist, and banker, and all rolled into one. So it's a lot of little things that add up.
All right, so let's talk about some of the upcoming shows. So tomorrow night at 7 p.m., obviously Carl Kennedy's going to be on, and that's going to be – all of these are going to be on Facebook.com/Fulton Street Collective. So that's where we want to send everybody over to that so that they can check everything out. So you've got tomorrow at 7 p.m. Now, who else is coming up?
So we got Carl Kennedy tomorrow, and then we have Soul Message on Friday. My Fridays are kind of open right now, so we put some shows in there. And that's Greg Rockingham on drums. Chris Foreman's going to play the M3 organ. Jeff Bradfield on guitar, Jeff Bradfield on saxophone, Lee Rothenberg on guitar, and special guest Inda Hoffman on vocals.
Nice.
And then we got a pretty busy month in July. You know, you can book 6 weeks out. Now we kind of book 2 weeks out. Mm-hmm. Don't need that long of a time to promote a show. We have Alyssa Olgan and Mike Alamana doing Easy Living from Ella Fitzgerald and Joe Pass. What else we got?
You got Chad McAuliffe.
Chad McAuliffe is doing Larry Young Unity.
Yep.
And then we got Mardra and Reggie Thomas doing Billie Holiday, Lady in Satin. Here's a show that's coming up. We don't know how we're going to do it, and even if we're going to do it. But Luke, the Heritage Orchestra, Luke Milovich group, is going to do Count Basie's Kansas City Suite. So that's 18 guys.
I was looking at that. I think you're going to have to do a little logistical planning over there.
Yeah,
for that
Luke,
kind of
I talked
thing.
To Luke today, and he's going to come over this week, and we're going to map everything out. We actually wanted to do it in the parking lot, and I thought that would really work. But it's a contingency on the weather, but also then you got to apply for this permit and that permit. And I just could see it getting really sunk with red tape. So we're gonna see if we can do it, and if everybody's comfortable, it'll just be me, the sound tech, and 18 musicians in a 2,000 square foot gallery, and hopefully make it work. And then we got Jeff Bradfield and Ryan Cohen doing Stan Getz, People Time. And then at the end, we have Tim Sicer's group doing weather reports, heavy weather.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a full month. And on top of that, we have the individual shows, Paul Mutzba, Leonard Simpson is going to be back in town fresh from the Monk Institute. Marcus Rutz is playing at the end of the month. So it's hopefully a nice balance.
And all these are streaming live. So these are all on Facebook.com/Fulton Street Collective. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, how do the artists decide what recording they're going to do and what artists they're going to do? Do you have any say in that, or do they approach you now with the concept, or do you have concepts that you approach certain artists and kind of program it that way?
They really come to me, and I would say, almost all the time I'll say yes, and it's an education for me too. I mean, I was not well versed with Ornette Coleman, and then Nick Mazzarella has done several albums of his, and that really piqued my interest. One that was really out of nowhere, which I am a huge fan of, is Alejandro Arzagasti did a Bar Wars from Willis Jackson. And that, I mean, I didn't even know Willis Jackson, and then I now all of a sudden become a fan. And so I get a big thrill out of it too, because it forces me to research these different musicians. Like, oh, that fell through the cracks, and that fell through the cracks, and why wasn't I listening to this? So I, most of the time, I enjoy it. Every now and then I'll get something like, that ain't gonna work now, but that's a rarity.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm glad we could actually talk virtually. Maybe sometime we'll actually be able to do a interview in person here or something.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yes.
What a concept that is. But congratulations, man. I'm glad things are still moving forward over there. Is there like a virtual tip jar or anything, or have you even gotten that far with
this stuff? That's the thing. We've gone back and forth with that. We sell online tickets and then give everybody an access code, like through Zoom or Twitch.
Yeah.
Or do we just keep it open and rely on people's generosity? And right now, I'd rather have the music more accessible. And, we do push the virtual tip jar. The artists can sell their work online. We document everything as the performance goes on. But we are relying on the virtual tip jar for tips. And I can't stress enough, when I introduce a show, please be generous. We just lost, I brought this up the other night, and we just lost the Mercury Theater.
Yeah.
And we lost the Improv Olympic Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope, people can recognize that everybody's got to be involved and engaged. And I think a great website is saveourstages.com.
Yeah.
And have everybody take a look at that, because it's really going to take everybody to get involved to get through this.
Well, it really is. I mean, and we could talk probably for another hour, hour and a half, especially with all of your background and all of that, how important it is to, get people out to clubs and venues during normal times, and how the weekends a lot of times make up for slow early parts of the week. So when there's like zero people coming into a venue for like 3 or 4 months, I'm not talking about the Fulton Street, but like regular clubs and venues that they rely on this stuff. It's one of those things, especially in phase 4, 50 or less or 25% of your club you can have people in, and phase 5 is a vaccine, which means we're going to be in this for quite a while, it's going to be really relying on people to, you know, get on board and understand how to help musicians in addition to helping these venues. So yeah, I agree. SaveOurStages.com. Of course, that's Civil, and people can get more information on that. The Chicago Independent Venue League, they've been pushing that out as well. So glad you brought that up because it's so important, and we're only going to see, unfortunately, I think we're going to see more and more venues fall on hard times just because you just can't be closed like this for so long without some ramifications or without some funding from the government. So we can only put some pressure on the city to see what they can come up with in order not to lose a lot of different venues that we currently have now, you know.
Right. And that's the thing is, we talked about this earlier, even if, you know, the cure came out today, if there was a vaccine today, are people going back into, you know, huge crowds again? I don't know. I think it's going to be a mental issue for people for a while. We're in this for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Well, I'm glad you got the Jazz Record Art Collective and the Fulton Street Collective up running online. Of course, we're going to share all the links below, and we'll always be posting things on ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, Chicago Music Revealed, as Chris continues to announce shows. So we've got all of July and a couple of shows left in June, so I encourage everybody to head over there. Chris, congratulations, man, keeping the ball rolling here even during a pandemic. What can we say?
Well, what else would we do, you know?
That's right. That's right. It couldn't get any worse than this.
Yeah.
I better not say
Let's
that.
Let's not find out.
All right, man. Thanks so much for jumping on.
You bet, man. Anytime. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Take care.
Chris Anderson. So I'm ready to have her and check out the Jazz Record Art Collective. Facebook.com/the Jazz Record Art Collective. Of course, Fulton Collective as well on Facebook. We're going to link everything up. He's got some great shows. And, of course, you can support a lot of wonderful Chicago musicians, which I'm sure all of us probably are very familiar with if you've been watching this show. So, all right. Appreciate everybody for watching today. And, of course, as I always say, we're going to link everything up. Coming up tomorrow, Harvey Tillis. Harvey Tillis coming on. He is a world-famous photographer. He also is one of the photographers that always contributes to Chicago Jazz Magazine at different performances throughout the city, but actually most notably at Jazz Record Art Collective. He is like one of the staples over there. He's always taking pictures. So you can see a lot of past photos, by the way, on ChicagoJazz.com from Harvey Tillis. But we're going to have him on tomorrow. Be talking about his book that came out last year, Somewhere in Space, which is a whole photo book of performances that happened at Space in Evanston that he has been taking for over 10 years. It's fascinating. The photography is incredible. Harvey's got a heck of a story as well. He's done a lot of professional work with media, but also he's gotten to take and follow around President Obama a little bit too. So maybe we'll hear some stories about that. Harvey's always fun to talk to. And then on Thursday, we are going to have the Jazz Institute on here. Heather Ireland Robinson will be joining me along with Adriana Pietro. They are going to be on. We're going to be talking about the brand new summer jazz camp they are launching, which is going to be virtual. So they're not going to skip a year. So that's going to be coming up on Thursday. And then Friday, our Blues and Beyond Friday, just got the announcement today. The world famous Jimmy Johnson, the 92-year-old world-famous blues musician, is going to be on with Dave Katzman and I on Friday at 6 p.m. And I can tell you that when I interviewed Jimmy Johnson at the Blues Fest last year, he's got some stories. And I'm hoping we get a lot of stories from Jimmy because it was incredible interviewing him last year. So I can't wait to hear some stories this Friday at 6 p.m. Of course, all the information at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com. As I always say, thank you for watching. If you like this, share it, like it. Tell your neighbors, tell the grandkids. Wait, tell your neighbors, call your family, call the grandkids. I got to get that right. Chicago Music Revealed right here, 6 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Thank you for watching and stay safe. I will see you on the next broadcast, which will be tomorrow, 6 p.m. See you then.